Hello and welcome to Contingency FM. My name is Phil and I'm joined today by Katie, Abby, Jossie and Hamida. And we are doing a... Oh yeah, say hi.
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 Yeah, good. Right. Okay, moving on.
Sorry.
This is the first of a three-part series on life after medical school. In this episode, we're going to look at how to make the most of F1, F2. We're going to chat about e-portfolios, ARCPs, what the heck are they, how to do them. And then in the next couple, we're going to look at understanding training posts and how to prepare for them, and a bit about outer training experiences. I'm excited. Are you?
Oh, very.
So excited.
But I just realised, Hamida's expressed her dislike of talking over people in podcasts, and I asked an open question to everybody, looking at everybody. I will not do this anymore.
I appreciate that, Phil.
You're welcome. Okay.
I really wanted to talk over you at that point. Sorry, probably not the time. Oops. Sorry.
So, let's start off. Before we started this, I thought it might be good to set a bit of a challenge for you guys. So who's up for a challenge?
Always.
Never.
Always. Excellent. Right, Abby, you have 30 seconds to explain what ARCP is. Just... Okay.
If anyone's wondering, there was a look of panic.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just setting my timer, one moment. You got a few breathing space. Okay, you ready? Go.
So ARCP is an annual review of your competencies and your year has gone, basically. It's done by senior medics on the whole. And
these pauses are wasting time.
It's normally outcome based, so you get different outcomes depending on how good your e-portfolio has been for the year. Ta-da!
Excellent, that's 23 seconds. I'm very impressed.
Oh, God. There's a lot of desperate looking about for validation. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Right. Who wants to say? So, as part of that, there's a few sort of sub things. So, we've got a second challenge. Who's up for chatting about what's a CBD?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, Jossie, 30 seconds, go.
Just CBDs?
Yeah.
So a CBD is a case-based discussion where you talk to a consultant or a reg or anyone more senior than you in that particular area about a case that you've been involved in.
13 seconds.
That was outstanding.
That's
very
good.
Concise,
straight,
precise. Well, I was expecting to do all of them.
Okay, you can check about many.
Did you want three more?
Do you want to carry on with all of them?
Only if no one else wants to, I don't mind.
I want to give mini keks a go.
Okay, right,
yeah.
Mini keks,
you
ready?
I want you to up the ante a bit.
15 seconds.
Is a long time.
15 seconds for mini keks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ready, steady, go.
A mini clinical experience where you do something on a ward environment or a clinical environment and somebody watches you and gives you feedback on it.
How's it different from a CBD?
You're not discussing it, they're watching you, giving you feedback on your performance at the bedside. That was extra.
Excluding my question, that 17 seconds.
That was extra, though. You asked me an extra question.
I thought it was outstanding.
I think
there
I did
go.
What I set out
you
to
came
do.
Here to do, yeah.
Katie, do you want to walk us through what a DOPS is?
Yeah, how long do I have for?
10 seconds.
10 seconds.
5.
10 seconds. You ready?
Yeah.
1
second.
Okay, ready, steady, go.
So it's a direct observation of a procedure. So someone more senior than you watches you do a practical procedure such as NG tubes or cannulation and gives you advice on it. No, that was more than 10 seconds.
Yeah, 12 seconds, but it's excellent.
It was good, though.
It was tight, it was tight.
Is it worth, at this point, just saying that these are all kind of compulsory bits of foundation? And as part of your ARCP, you have to have done a certain number of these for each job that you do.
Yeah.
And then you link them to the curriculum to prove that you've met the curriculum. So that's why we're talking about them.
Do you know what? It is very worth saying that, and it probably would have been worth saying that before we did this exercise.
Sorry, we left everyone in suspense.
Yeah.
Besides, we did a random brainstorm in the middle of...
It is nice.
Yeah.
So that is as much as we're going to go into sort of just sort of talking about very dry sort of didactic stuff, we're going to chat more about sort of link this to more of our personal experiences and stories. So let's chat about the pearls and pitfalls then, now we've got a bit of context to talk about. So Hamida, do you want to chat a bit about some of the things that you, like advice and pitfalls that you fell into or rose out of?
I think one thing I've always struggled with since medical school is doing things, not leaving things to the very end, so doing things consistently through the year. And when I started my e-portfolio, I wanted to make it a very clear goal to do things as I go through the year. I think that's important to know, especially at the beginning of F1, because they do kind of look at the distribution of when you put in your mini kexes and dops and your reflections. So you don't want to leave them off for the last minute. And I think that's something I'm glad that I managed to do.
And it is something that I remember like people told me, but I don't know how seriously I took it.
So I would definitely say do things throughout the year. Try and get it done early, and your very last rotation, you only have about half of it to get things completed, because your ARCP will be in May, and then you'll have all of June, July, and August. Then you won't have any time to do anything else. So,
Can I just say, if you're listening to this and it's coming up to ARCP and you're now panicking, thinking that you haven't done it, that was me in F1 and in F2. I said at the very beginning of each year I'm going to be on top of it this year, and it inevitably got left until the last minute. If you're not behind where they think you are, someone will likely tell you, and you'll get sent kind of form saying you need to do this, you know, so much stuff, so that you're not going to, so that you can get through the year. So they will catch you, it's fine. it just causes you more stress in the end. But I even though I probably left it too last minute, I got through F1 and F2 absolutely fine. So don't panic.
Yeah, I wonder if it's helpful to like set yourself kind of like artificial deadlines. In the first month, I don't think you should be worrying too much about getting anything done. Like, just get the hang of the ropes, I reckon. But like, are there any sort of like junction points in the year, do you think, that you should be aiming to have got a certain amount of things done?
I think by the end of the first rotation, this is like personal experience, but by the end of the first rotation, I'd got my tab, which is the team assessment of behaviour. So that's something you send around to your team that you've worked with for your first rotation. You don't have to do any first rotation, but the longer you leave it, the more of a pain it is, so it's best to get that out of the way. And I think I'd wanted to split it so that I wanted to get kind of an even spread, like Hamida was saying, like an even distribution of tickets throughout the year, so it looked like I'd got something from each job. So I think I'd
fake it till you make it, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Thank you, Phil.
Sorry.
So I think I'd wanted to get however many CBDs we needed or whatever. I'd like split them into three, and then thought I'll get this many in this job, this many in this job, and then a few less in the last one, just because I knew I had less time, like Hamida said. So I made the end of each job a goal, if that makes sense.
I don't know about where you guys did foundation, but my foundation school basically required that. So we had to split it up pretty evenly. So you could never fall that far behind. Because they set these, and that's how they saw whether or not you were behind what you should be at. And they also set an earlier deadline, so it was about a month before the actual ARCP, where they said you have to get all your stuff in for then. So that if you were running late, you actually had a couple of weeks to make it up. But if you don't have that, setting your own deadlines should help.
There will be kind of a national minimum of things that you have to prove that you've achieved, but there will also be trust specific deadlines and requirements. So it might be that your trust requires you to do something more or something less than your friend at a different trust, and that's just because the trusts can set their own requirements.
I guess it's best to look at your local guidance. These are all things that your trusts should provide good advice for, for the specifics, but I guess it's just sort of as a general principle, little and often.
Yeah,
probably,
exactly.
And using like a quiet night shift or something like that is quite a good opportunity, I reckon, to get stuff done.
Yeah, definitely.
For me, night shifts were a really good source of opportunities to do mini kexes and CBDs because we had, as F1s, our seniors were the medreggers. There weren't SHOs, is that in between steps? So you did a lot with the medreggers and spent a lot of the night seeing people with them or they were reviewing people after you. So actually, that was where I got most of my mini kexes and CBDs from, was kind of after night shifts.
I think mine was on the... Well, to be fair, I'm just looking at Hamida because we did foundation in the same place. I think I got a lot of my F1 from my on-call shifts because that's when in where we did foundation, you have your SHOs basically working with you in all in medicine, surgery, where you know you tend to be always have that intermediate like person there. So as an F1, that was I got a lot of them on my on-calls too. Also like make the most of ward time, so if you see a good opportunity for a mini kex or a CBD, like take it. That's what I would say as well, as a really good, as a little pearl. You know, if you can see the opportunity there, so if there's going to be a difficult conversation or there's going to be a good opportunity to see a patient in a ward round and you're not rushed off your feet, your consultant's got time or your SHO's got time, then go for it. I think
the other thing is you can be a bit creative with what count with what you do as mini kexes. It doesn't have to be someone's watching you take a history and do an examination. I got mini kexes for, I'm sure I got one for like a discharge summary. Like someone looked at my discharge summary and decided whether or not it was good. I had to have a nurse go in with me to for a difficult conversation, that nurse then did a mini kex for me. So it doesn't have to be your kind of typical history and examinations.
And I think it took me a little while to realise that I didn't have to set it up as a mini kex or a CBD in advance of it happening. That actually quite a lot of these things were things that were really tricky situations. There wasn't time to think about forms and tickets, and actually you dealt with it. And you dealt with it with help from senior, and then after that, you kind of said, "Would you mind doing a mini kex for me for that, or do you think we could have a discussion about that at some point?" And then, could we do a CBD? And it was about kind of making using the ticket, the mini kex, or the CBD as a way to learn more from that experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather than just trying to tick a box.
That's such a good point. I think a lot of this is about creating your own learning experiences and seeking them out and asking for them. You will have seniors who will offer you these things, but a lot of your learning that from now on is going to be self-directed, and this is like a prime example of that. So don't be shy, ask for the mini kexes, ask for the CBDs. The worst that anybody can say is not right now, and then you do it again.
You
know? So when should you, like, I don't know, what am I talking about? Abby, you had a this is the crappiest transition. I'm just going to edit the hell out.
I think, yeah.
What I was trying to get at is that you had a story about a time, and I don't want to ruin it for you, or for the listeners.
For the listeners.
For the listeners,
for
our dedicated listeners. About a time that you didn't write down something, and then someone refused to sign you off on it.
Oh, basically just... You made it sound a lot more dramatic than it was. I just forgot to say. So I basically... I'd done... because I was going to say about when Jossie said, like, you know, you a lot of these experiences are off the hoof, like absolutely, but some, when you, because you have to get a number that are done with consultants, don't you? And some consultants do like you to say beforehand, I need a mini kex this ward round, can I do one with you? You know, because they sometimes don't like it if you ask retrospectively. A lot really don't mind, but just be aware that sometimes they'll say, well, I would like you to kind of ask me before, but you know. But I'd basically done a mini kex with a consultant and then just forgot about it, and life got in the way, and I never sent the email or the ticket, and then I sent it like a month later, and they were like, who are you? what's this? Have I met you? And it was, and I didn't get it. They very fairly didn't sign it, and I learned my lesson quite quickly to, like Hamida said, be prompt, because I think that's an important lesson to learn quite early on.
Any tips from yourself, Katie? Or pearls, pitfalls, things that you've done horribly wrong?
Things I've done horribly wrong?
Yeah.
I think I've talked about, in terms of the portfolio, it's, was leaving to the last minute and not linking properly. So you have to link...
Yeah.
You have to link... everything. So the curriculum was, I don't know, 20 items long, and for each item you had to have at least two bits of evidence.
Mm.
And in F1, I got pulled up for overlinking, because I put, like, if I thought it had any relevance, say a CPD, if I thought it had any relevance to that curriculum item, I put it in. So I had 5 or 6 for each item. And then really you want 2 or 3 good pieces of evidence. Rather than trying to overlink.
Yeah.
So because they're not gonna wade through it, and
no.
It just looks like you're trying to cover up it looks like you're trying to cover up bad evidence.
I reckon I wouldn't link one piece of evidence to more than 2 or 3 items.
That was a rule of thumb I got told, so don't put more than two, like put between 2 and 4 on each curriculum outcome,
mm-hmm.
and don't link a piece of evidence more than twice, really.
So I think I completely misunderstood those instructions when I was in F1, so I thought each piece of evidence needed to be linked to at least 2 or 3 curriculum outcomes.
Yeah.
So I ended up overlinking way too much, and that's why I needed extra time to complete my outcome, outcome one or whatever it was that you wanted to get. So that's something else. Like, be very clear. Ask your supervisor.
Yeah.
Be very clear on what it is they're asking from you.
Yeah. And if you're not sure, review your portfolio with it in front of you with your educational supervisor at one of your first or second meetings.
Yeah.
Mm.
Jossie, sorry.
Yeah. And I suppose. But just be wary of the curriculum. You don't have to agonise over it all year at all.
No.
But when you get a certain amount through the year and you've still got time left to do some mini cases and CBDs and things, have a look at it and see where your gaps are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you might end up in a position where you're looking at a curriculum outcome.
Mm.
So I had that. There used to be one around doing CPR for resuscitation. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Airways and stuff like that.
And I didn't have a mini-hex or a CBD about that, but then was told that it was fine. I can link kind of DNAR discussions into my CPR outcome, because that was, you know, not doing it and still related.
Mm.
But I had a little panic because I didn't look at it till the last minute
and
kind of didn't think that anyone was going to need CPR in the couple of weeks I had left.
Can I just mention on that point that you don't, it's not like you need 3 CBDs for each curriculum outcome. The CBD and mini-cax are quite strong evidence, so having one is quite good, but you can also use reflections, you can use e-learning. It doesn't have to be really, you know, proper assessments. But can I just come back to the show your educational supervisor? Educational supervisors vary massively.
Yeah. So what if you have an educational supervisor who maybe isn't as able to support you?
So I never had a bad one, but I had experiences where they didn't necessarily know all the ins and outs of exactly how much linking needed to happen, because I had this overlinked portfolio that my educational supervisor didn't realise was an issue, which, you know, like I said, it didn't hinder me in any way. I still made it to F2, but you do need to know yourself what the problems are in case your educational supervisor doesn't.
I was in a similar position of had the portfolio in front of my supervisor, but obviously they've got a lot of different duties and these things do change quite often, the rules on them change quite often, so it was a big lesson for me on taking ownership for my learning. It is, in the end, it is your responsibility, it is your outcome, as much as your supervisor is there to help you it is there to help you.
Mm.
So you have to help yourself first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's there's maybe a bit of a transition that goes on from med school to being an F1 is you're not. I think through med school they almost like they pull back the amount of support. There's in fifth year, you know, you're expected to do a lot of self-directed learning. That you're not expected to be taught everything. And I think often it can be really, there can be sort of vestiges of that way of thinking in terms of sort of expecting something to be covered. And I think once you're at med school, there's really not much hand-holding when it comes to sort of careers and stuff. And that's part of why we wanted to produce these sort of podcasts, just to give you, like, at least to know what questions to ask and which way to look. But and this certainly won't cover everything. But another thing which just sort of occurred to me, which I found really helpful, is about saving important stuff. So make sure you create like a folder on your personal hard drive at work. Create a folder in your emails. If you get an email which has got a bit of feedback in it from a patient or a colleague, if you get sort of a certificate for something, put it in the hard drive, put it in your email folder immediately, and then at the end of your foundation to email it all to yourself, at your personal hard drive, because you'll lose it. And I've had a nightmare where I'd lost my foundation certificate and I couldn't find it with half an hour before a deadline for my ACF application. Oh man, I had a meltdown in the teaching fellow's office, and then
how was that, Jossie?
No, you weren't there.
I'm sure I was there.
You weren't there. It was like 5 o'clock at night.
Can
but
you not just get it off Horus?
I forgot my password, didn't I?
So don't do that.
So eventually remembered my password and it's all alright. But
because,
like,
I nearly had the same issue, but
yeah.
I remembered my password.
Yeah, you do. So that's another thing. Download. So the things on Horus, I don't think Horus is used for training, but it is now.
For training, no.
So
sorry,
it's just
no.
used for foundation, so anything on for Horus won't necessarily be accessible to you in the long distant future.
And
so
if you've used a trust email, you can't reset your password. Because.
Yeah.
So I've used a trust email and I just have to keep hoping I've remembered my password.
Yeah, so just make sure that you remember to download everything onto a personal place at some point during foundation before you leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's chat a little bit about extracurricular activities that you might be doing. So we talked a bit about portfolio. So what kind of extracurricular activities can you do during foundation to sort of broaden your experience? Jossie?
Well, so I didn't do a taste a week, but I did do a taste a day.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. I did some community palliative care because I had a ward palliative care job, but I really wanted to do a bit of community and stuff within that. So, and you can organise to do taster weeks using your study leave in whatever speciality you want. And so it's a really good way of kind of finding out whether a specialty is for you, whether it is something that you would be interested in. You can do more than one.
Mm-hmm.
It will vary depending on your trust and what your study leave kind of allocations are, but find out about them.
Mm.
Did anyone else do any sort of taster stuff?
I did a sort of taster week.
Yeah, because you did a slightly different
I went through a different route. So I want to do peds and didn't get a paediatric job as part of my foundation, but I had an obs and gynae job. And they had the neonatal unit was part of the women's health kind of bit of the hospital, and the consultant who organised the rota basically just put me on neonates for a couple of weeks, because they did that with GP trainees anyway. So I got in, it worked out as about 8 days that I got to, and I didn't have to use any study leave.
Mm.
So that was great fun. I loved that.
I've just thought of another extracurricular activity that I did in foundation.
Yeah.
I was on the mess committee in, I forgot about that because I did think of it as an extracurricular activity, but that was really fun. I did that in F2, and that's something you can do extra as well. So that was like organising the mess stuff and keep like, because like when you become a foundation doctor, you can choose to put into the mess account from your wages. That's how it works in Sunderland anyway, so that you can put towards, you know, like events or nice things for the mess, like nice chairs and blankets and pillows, and coffee and tea.
Ice cream,
yeah. So yeah, we had a great time. That was really good, and that was a nice social thing to do in F2.
Really cool.
That was fun. So I liked that. There's a big group that did it, and it's something you can put on your like portfolio CV that looks a bit interesting.
The other thing, I just thought of something else I did actually. The med school got in touch to basically ask us to do lectures. And teaching outside of like uni or normal working hours. So I did my first large group teaching as an F2.
And also, I guess sort of something else which is kind of comes up for ARCP, it's on the portfolio, you have to do an item of QIP, which is Quality Improvement Project. We will be hopefully doing a separate episode on this to discuss that a bit more in detail, but Hamida, do you want to give us an overview on, did you do a QIP, what was it, any advice?
So I did an audit on the use of antibiotics in PCD for people coming with sore throats, and I think a lot of people are under the impression that your QI project needs to be an audit. I certainly was. I think it is helpful to do an audit, it is helpful for applications, for understanding the audit cycle. But it is a bit more effort than, for example, doing a small quality improvement project, writing a new leaflet on a condition, looking at one feature of practice and seeing how it can be changed, doing a questionnaire, those kind of things. So I think it is important to highlight that your quality improvement project is a mandatory part of your ARCP, but you can make it as easy or as complex as you want it to be. And I definitely think it's worth doing it in something that you enjoy and that you find interesting. Because it will always feel like less work if you do it that way.
Yeah.
Is it worth pointing out that unless it's changed, in F1 you just have to participate in it, and in F2 you have to lead it, which is subtly different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth watching out when you're on a ward, and if you notice something doesn't work well, that's a good place to be thinking, what can I do about it?
Yeah, definitely.
So, and I guess sort of if you aren't sure about a lot of these things, you can chat to, there's lots of support locally. So you've got various sort of, like your foundation lead, educational supervisor, but also if you, it kind of ties into what we're going to talk about in the next episode, you also got your career services. Joss, you had a good experience with?
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do, but we had some really helpful talks from the career service at the beginning of F2 about what kind of all of the different options were and what training programs there were and what they looked like and what sort of things you should or could be doing in order to kind of prepare for an application if you were going to apply. And it didn't really help me to decide what I wanted to do, but I really kind of, it was really helpful to understand what the options were, and the people who kind of ran the career service were really nice and approachable, and if you wanted to make an appointment with them, then kind of you could have one-on-one meetings with them to discuss your various options.
Cool, well let's wrap that up there, because we've had quite a chat about lots of different things. So we've talked a bit about the overview of the foundation program, we've talked a bit about some of the pearls and pitfalls of going through sort of getting your portfolio completed, about some of the extracurricular activities that you can do alongside these things in F1, F2, about where to get some help if you need it. So in the next episode, we're gonna chat about the training programs themselves and how to prepare best for them in F1, F2. Look forward to I don't, we're not going to see you, I don't know, it's a weird way to finish, isn't it?
Speak to you then.
Speak to you then.
That wasn't any less weird, was
no.
it? Not really.
This has been Contingency FM. I don't know why I left that as like a question.